Evident Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprint, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome once again to Evident Footprint on BBSRadio.com. It's Tuesday, the 29th of April on the West Coast, and we're now into Wednesday on the East Coast, and that would be April 30th for those of you who haven't looked at a calendar for a while. Interesting day for me. I just realized, actually, it would be an anniversary going back to 1985. I had my first near-death experience on this date. I just realized when I said April 30th. And I'll probably discuss that in a later show sometime later on this year. It's a very compelling story. Nonetheless, I didn't really intend to even go there, except the date reminded me of that. And I'm happy to be alive. Why? Well, we've got last night's guest with us. In fact, he's going to be here again tomorrow night. We were discussing chemtrails last night, and we were discussing a new phenomenon that has been documented by various people throughout the world, including a gentleman that's one of the foremost experts on this phenomenon. And it's the appearance of sylphs that are assisting us in getting rid of chemtrails. If you happen to own or use or know someone who owns an orgone accumulator or orgone generator, as they're sometimes referred to, an original invention of scientist inventor Wilhelm Reich, you may know that these devices, which are relatively inexpensive for what they do, put out a really, really good vibe. They really clean up the air, clean up the energy around your home, even your city, your state, and they're being used more often now, especially to combat this evil intention, this evil and toxic spraying of our skies and the pollution of our water and our lands and really an assault on nature itself. And we're talking about chemtrails. Now, Ken Adachi, who is our guest tonight, last night after the show forwarded me a copy of a film that he had made showing actual chemtrail dispersion going on. And the video was very interesting. I could tell immediately that there were sylphs in the film that he had taken, and we began inspecting closer and doing still shots of the video, and the most incredible collection of sylphs appeared. And we may talk about that for a moment tonight, as well as some other interesting news that Ken would like to share. So with that, I would like to bring author, metaphysical scientist and inventor and researcher and the webmaster of educate-yourself.org, Mr. Ken Adachi. Ken, good evening. How are you?
Good evening, Don, and thanks again for a very nice intro.
Well, I was writing that one all day today, so.
Okay, well, you're sort of outdoing yourself from day to day. I can't wait. I can't wait to hear what tomorrow is going to be.
Wait till I write a joke. I mentioned to Ken off the air that I posted a small collection of photos. Actually, we could probably derive several hundred photos from that video that you took. I'm sure you well know yourself. I think I posted about 30 photos that you had sent me. And I wrote a little piece called Ken Adachi Films Sylphs Dispersing Chemtrails.
Oh, wonderful.
And I basically described your interview last night and then the results of looking at these sylphs, but I've allowed the pictures to do much of the talking.
Oh.
And so you might want to take a glance at that if you have a chance at some point here during the evening.
Yeah, I will. I'm anxious to see what you've done. So yeah, as we talk here, I'll get that page to come up. My computer's continuing to boot up, but it'll be ready soon.
Okay. Well, I just have to tell you that, you know, these are amazing pictures. If people want to see phenomenon in, you know, people have a hard time believing, you know, when you tell them straight out, when you stress the truth about something, and it's beyond their comprehension. It's like, oh, this can't be true, you know, this guy's on drugs or something. And in reality, these pictures really show a lot of detail.
Yeah.
And you were very methodical in giving us the process of how you were trying some different filters to bring out or enhance the images that are there.
Yeah.
And I don't know how accurately I described us going through this last night, but we were just fascinated by this.
Oh, we were having a ball. I mean, I guess I should explain a little bit. So the listener who is new to the topic will understand the significance of what we are referring to now. First, the chemtrails are substances which the government has been spraying into the skies of North America, most of Europe, some parts of Asia, and some countries in South America, but not so many. But especially Europe and North America seem to be getting the brunt of chemtrail spraying. It's almost daily in most areas, and often it's around the clock. So if anyone listening to this show doesn't know what chemtrails are, you simply need to go to a computer and enter the word chemtrails in a Google search engine or a Yahoo search engine or any search engine. You're going to get many hits. That's going to come up with websites that have photos and explanations of what chemtrails are. Now, my website, I've been posting articles about and photos about chemtrails since the winter of 1997-98, because that's when I first became aware of them. I heard a radio show about them, and so I went outside. The next day I started to look up, and I saw the very thing that was being discussed on the show. So I started to take photos then, and I've been taking photos almost every day ever since, when they are spraying chemtrails. Now, there are times, sometimes it's days, sometimes it's weeks, in which they don't spray chemtrails, but it happens more often than it doesn't. And of late, we've had a pickup in chemtrail activity probably since winter of last year. There was an intensification of spraying in most major city areas of North America, and they've been keeping it up fairly heavily ever since. Now, we won't review in this show the substances that are being sprayed, because many other shows have already talked about that, but we know there's metals, there's pathogens, and there's other substances on the nanoparticle level that are part of chemtrail fallouts that are helping to precipitate disease conditions. People now having much more respiratory difficulty than used to be the case prior to the advent of chemtrails. And we have new diseases that are showing up in growing. Morgellons is being one of them. Morgellons is a condition that came about because of the substances they're dropping in chemtrails. But there's many other diseases which have names, such as Lyme disease, such as Gulf War syndrome, mycoplasma-related diseases. in others that we're giving it a conventional name, but people are getting the pathogens from breathing chemtrail fallout. A lot of people, probably the majority of the country, has the pathogens in their body for mycoplasma, for instance, for Lyme. There are a number of what we call stealth diseases that don't even have names, but people have certain peculiar symptoms. We're convinced that is also chemtrail related. Now, we, Don Croft and his wife, made a fabulous discovery in the summer of 2001. He had been contacted by a man who had a piece of equipment. It's called a radionics device. And there was a man who was making these radionics devices, and inside the box of the device, beyond the normal parts that are installed in a radionic diagnostic machine, or broadcaster as it's called, radionic devices are very simple interior construction. The man found that this individual had taken some fiberglass resin and mixed it with metal particles, and he poured a layer of it, about a quarter inch thick layer, in the bottom of the box. The man had no idea, the owner of who purchased the equipment, had no idea what the purpose of that was, and he asked Don Croft. So Don Croft opened the box, he looked at it, and he asked his wife, and she can sense auras, she can sense energy quite easily. She's a very gifted person. And she says, well, this thing is putting out a type of energy that seems to enhance the human aura. And what Don did is that he copied the idea. He has a little Holder-Clark-type zapper device that he had been selling on his website since probably the mid to late 90s or so. And he took some fiberglass resin and mixed it up with some metal particles, aluminum shavings. And similar to the radionics box, he poured a thin layer of it in the bottom of his zapper box. And they were on the beach in Florida in the late summer of 2001. And while on the beach, his wife Carol, who can see human auras very well, what Don had done is that he placed the Terminator box on his body because he wanted to have a little zapping session. And instantaneously, she saw Don's aura expand about 5 feet beyond its normal radiated distance. And she told him this. And she said, you know, your aura just jumped 5 feet when you put that on. So they took the device off, and the aura dropped back to where it was, and then they put the device back on. So this mixture of fiberglass resin and metal particles was doing something unusual. Now, Wilhelm Reich discovered exactly what that was back in the 1930s and early 40s. Reich, who is the modern-day discoverer of orgone energy and has two books which discuss orgone energy in great detail, Reich discovered that when you put together, juxtaposition, an organic substance from the earth and metal, you get an unusual event that takes place. The metal acts as an attractor of orgone energy. Orgone energy is diffused throughout the universe. It's passing through every square millimeter of our space. It passes right through the earth. It's ubiquitous. It's diffused throughout the universe. He found, though, that the metal acts as an attractor. And when the orgone energy is attracted to the metal, what happens then is when it arrives at the metal, it is immediately repelled from the metal. So the metal both attracts it, but once the orgone energy hits the surface of it, it bounces away, as it were. It's immediately repelled. Wright found, if you put a substance of the earth, now it could be earth itself, but more practically, he found that plant life, which contains carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen, carbohydrates, had the ability to sort of absorb this orgone energy, which is bouncing off the metal. And that's the principle of what he was making in the late 30s and early 40s, called an orgone accumulator. Because he would take metal sheeting, iron thin gauge iron sheeting, and put it against planks of wood, and he would make a box out of it. So you had a wooden box, you know, four sides, the top and the bottom, made out of wood, and then the inside of the box was lined all about, all four sides, top and bottom, with thin metal sheeting. And that is what he called a one-layer orgone accumulator. And he had, for instance, found that the temperature inside an orgone accumulator is about a half a degree or 0.6 degrees higher than the ambient air temperature outside the accumulator. He began to notice many scientific observations concerning the orgone accumulator. He also found out, and I'm skipping ahead a few years, he did a lot of research before this, but he found out if he made a large box so that a human being could sit in it, an orgone accumulator, that the person sitting in the box, particularly if they had a serious disease condition, would have remarkable therapeutic effects from this orgone accumulator. Now, moving ahead to our story, what we're talking about is when we're making an orgone generator, not the same thing as an accumulator. It's important mm-hmm. to understand there is a distinction. Mm-hmm. The device we're making is using fiberglass resin, which is a type of organic hydrocarbon, okay? And in its liquid form, of course, it's liquidy, it's syrupy, but then when we add a catalyst, the fiberglass resin, it cures, and now it becomes a plastic, but it's a plastic that has what's called a crystalline lattice makeup, okay? Now, what we're doing is we're mixing in our metal shavings in among the fiberglass so that orgone energy passes through this device. It's attracted to the metal. The metal repels it. The fiberglass does more than absorb it. The fiberglass, in this case, changes the polarity of the orgone energy from the negative form, which Wilhelm Reich abbreviated as DOR, which stands for deadly orgone energy, and it now changes it or transmutes it into the positive polarity of orgone, which we abbreviate with the initials OR. So an orgone generator is something new. It's a new kid on the block in which it has the ability to transmute negative polarity orgone into positive polarity orgone. And we found out, I shouldn't say we found out, but Don Croft and others who had been looking into this phenomenon found that if they inserted some pipes into a large bucket, a 2-gallon bucket filled with fiberglass resin and metal, if they put 6 pipes in there and they enhanced it a little by putting quartz crystals in the bottom of each 6 pipes and set it up someplace where you had a chemtrail overcast. This is back in late 2001, that this device now, and with the pipes in place, seems to create a blue hole in the chemtrail overcast. It was as if we had a vacuum cleaner and we were sucking the substance out of those chemtrails that was holding them together. And what happened is that the longer he left Chem Buster set up, the wider the radius that the blue hole expanded to. What I mean by blue hole is that they dispersed the chemtrails so the blue sky above would show through. So that was the first experience we had with being able to do something about chemtrails. You know, prior to that, people had no idea, what can we do? You know, the government is stonewalling us about spraying. We don't have the ability to take those aircraft out of the air. So people were stuck. So this is the first time that we could at least have some effect on the course of chemtrails. Now, that was back in early 2002, and we were elated for the first couple of years to get out the word about this. People began to make these devices. They can obtain them from people like me or lots of other people who got into the business of making these things. But a new development occurred in 2004. In the spring of 2004, we started to notice, and Z.S. Livingstone especially, who's a writer, he's a psychic, a very gifted psychic up in Canada. He, in fact, had sent me some essays prior to the arrival of these large sylphs. He wrote an essay almost 6 months before they actually showed up. He said that he got a telepathic communication from these sylphs that indicated that they were coming to Earth from other parts of the solar system to assist humanity in detoxifying, neutralizing chemtrails. And they referred to themselves as the giant sylphs. And if you look on my website under the articles of Z.S. Livingstone and go back to that period, probably late 2003, you'll read the article in which he predicted that large sylphs will be coming in from Saturn, I believe he told me, and one other planet, I can't remember. And in about March of 2004, the first sylph I've ever seen was pointed out to be my Carol Croft. So we now see that sylphs are in the atmosphere. They're manifesting themselves into a cloud-like form, but they take on shapes that are so symmetrical, so unusual, so different from an ordinary cloud that you can recognize them from if you spend some time studying them and looking at the photos. Of course, the casual viewer who doesn't have the eye, or doesn't develop the eye, I should say, will just say, oh, that's just a cloud. But no, you got to look carefully. Once you look carefully, you can see sylphs have very distinguishing features. Very often they look almost exactly like a counterpart to an animal, a fish, sometimes a humanoid form like an angel. There's quite a variety of shapes they can manifest in. Wolves, hawks, thunderbirds. You can ask the American Native Americans about that. That's the shape that the sylphs had manifested to Native Americans as, thunderbirds. That's where the name came from. And we have pictures of sylphs that look just like a thunderbird. Now, when we were talking yesterday, I mentioned to you that early that morning I was taking photographs with my digital camera of chemtrails and sylphs that were showing up early in the morning. I was out there about 9 o'clock. So they were spraying, laying down lines, and as usually is the case here anyway, sylphs show up fairly quickly when chemtrails start coming in. So I'm usually out there every day taking photos of the chemtrails and the sylphs, and I kind of watch the battle every day and see who's winning and see who's getting ahead and see what other things I can notice. So I did that yesterday. I took about a dozen shots in the morning, and then a couple hours later I took another dozen shots, and mid and late afternoon I took some more shots. I also took some video around 6:30 or 7. It's still light here at that time. Because I saw right directly over my house, and I have a large 5-gallon CB in the back of my house. Plus, I'm making a lot of CBs here, so I'm kind of CB central if you will. I have a lot of orgone generators here. And it was just a huge sylph, unusual, generally circular in shape, but I could see there was so much going on with the sylph that I changed my camera over to the video function. So rather than just take stills of it, it's so big I couldn't get it in one shot. I had to pan my camera around. So I put it on video and I panned it around. And I did it a couple times, and there was some other larger sylphs that I also panned so that I could look at it later when I download the film and could see it more clearly on my computer. And I can examine it very closely in Photoshop because I can enlarge the photos, and I can run them through various enhancement filters, which can increase the contrast, which can reverse the polarity. You know, the light is dark and the dark becomes light. There's lots of toys. If you happen to have the program called Photoshop in your computer, you can have a lot of fun with the photos, and you can reveal a lot of detail. And that was the purpose of doing these various filterings, to see what the photo would reveal. And so I began to work on it, and after we finished talking, we did our show last night, I sent you a dozen or so of the earliest morning photos that I had done. And then, no, excuse me, I sent those early into the day to you, I think. I sent those in the morning, perhaps.
I think, well,
yeah, the
I think
first,
you
very first batch you got from me, I think, was earlier in the day.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
My time, it was afternoon.
The afternoon, right, okay, because, all right, so... So now, though, however, I think we were talking about those a little bit, and I said to him, I told you, well, listen, I'm going to upload my camera here, the pictures that are in here. I said, I took a lot of really interesting ones this afternoon, tonight, even more spectacular than what you saw this morning. So I wanted to tell you what I saw, but after I got the pictures loaded, I'm looking at my screen, I'm seeing, Mamma Mia, these are some really spectacular shots here, extraordinary looking sylphs. And I had noticed that yesterday they did a wonderful job of vacuuming the skies of chemtrails, and so that by the time the sun was going down, the sky, the overall, you know, atmosphere over my head no longer had this haze that we're so accustomed to seeing with chemtrail spray. You know, even though people might not actually see the chemtrails, the feathered out, you know, spreading chemtrails, they still see, very often, a kind of a strange whitish haze. That is chemtrails, too. It's just that it's highly dispersed chemtrails. But we all, after looking at the sky carefully for 10 years, we're all familiar with what that white chemtrail haze is. On the other hand, yesterday evening, as the sun was going down, I could see the sun was so clear. The rays of light were a very whitish yellow to white. But I can see from the sharpness, the clarity, that haze was gone. And the other thing I noticed, the sky was, of course, the sun was just going down, so it wasn't dark yet, but still, the sky now was looking much bluer than it had previously, when we had the chemtrail haze. And what I had all around me is I had banks of transmuted clouds. Now, when a sylph or sylphs ingest chemtrails, they convert the toxic elements in the chemtrails into more benign elements. The specific elements are discussed in two or three essays written by Z.S. Livingstone. They're on my webpage. They're on the link. They're in two places. They're on the link called Sylphs. If anyone goes to my webpage, go to the link that says Sylphs. Scroll down. You'll find Z.S. Livingstone's explanation of how sylphs transmute chemtrails into non-toxic substances. And they kind of, after making this transmutation, they essentially spit out the residue. It's the only way I can think of expressing it. They eject the residue after they've put it through this, and this residue begins to form into little small, what shall I say, little small clumplets, it seems, of clouds. But they're very unusual-looking clouds. They kind of have a cracked, if you know what clay looks like when it's cracked by the sun, kind of has a pebbly appearance to it. Yesterday, they were producing these transmuted clouds, and the earlier pictures you saw that I sent you included some pictures of the transmuted clouds, and it has that pebbly appearance to it. However, they had been transmuting chemtrails all day long. They built up a large amount of these transmuted cloud banks, which then begin to coalesce into larger groups of clouds until finally they simply agglutinated into a conventional cumulus cloud.
Mm-hmm.
Now, cumulus clouds that form naturally begin usually in the morning, and because you have the increase of heat, you get an invective rise, moist air rises, it cools, and then it forms in the clouds. However, cumulus clouds don't normally begin to build at 5 or 6 o'clock in the evening. That's not the way nature normally works. The buildup process occurs from the morning into, let's say, early afternoon or mid-afternoon. By 2:30 or 3, in a normal weather system, I'm not talking about storms now, I'm just talking a normal summer day, depending on convection for cloud growth. The cloud growth activity stops around 2:30 or 3, and then the clouds begin to shrink inside. They gradually become smaller. So by the time the sun goes down, the clouds are largely dissipated. You get a little bit residue here and there around the horizon, but not much. But these cumulus clouds had built up from the residue of transmuted clouds. This was an unusual thing. So that's what I was out there taking digital pictures of and taking video of. This was occurring between 6:30 and 7 and 7:30 in the evening. And that's when I took the video of this huge sylph centered right over my house. I've had a number of big ones come over my house, but this is one of the bigger ones. And I scanned it with my video, and then when I uploaded it and looked at the video, I'm on the phone to you while I'm looking at the video for the first time, and I think you remember my reaction. I says, oh my God, there's some serious manifestations of life forms in this sylph cloud. So I sent you a copy of the video as well as some stills that I was making of it, and then you notice even more quickly than I do many more life form manifestations. There's the thing that popped out me instantly was there was this very easy to recognize head of a man who sort of looks like a Barnum and Bailey clown. So it has a round bulbous nose and it is wearing some sort of hat, it seems,
mm-hmm.
almost like from the Middle Ages. And he has a smile on his face. And it's so easy to see. And I'm so glad I took that video, because had I just taken stills, I might not have seen him at all, because the sylph was so huge, I would have had to, you know, kind of take each quadrant, you know, and it might have taken a dozen shots to cover the whole sylph, because it was so huge. And I'm not sure I would have done that. So by just scanning it with the video camera, I was able to catch most of it. And so what I started to do, and I'm talking on the phone to you, is I went into Photoshop, I captured the screen so I'd have a still frame, a JPEG. I bring it into Photoshop, and then you start enlarging it, zooming in on the life forms that you can recognize. And we're talking animals, we're talking humanoid faces, we're talking of different creatures that we're assigning names to because they just seem to look close to that. You discovered one that you called, was it the lion or the pussycat? I can't remember.
Well, there was actually like a house cat, but then there was there was a lioness, a female lion.
Yes.
And there was a seahorse, a chimpanzee, and a baboon.
And yeah, we recognized at least two females, did we not? A woman's face was pretty clear.
Yes.
In another case, a woman in a very long daffodish dress.
Yeah, I think the most astounding picture of all of them was when you inverted or you enhanced one of the photos to show more contrast, and there were actually three cherubs and the face of a woman in that photo.
Yeah.
And it's marked as such on my website.
On your website.
Yeah. We have to still do a little bit of work in coming up, maybe naming these other than the shots that they actually are. You know, the number of the actual JPEG as you catalog them.
Yes.
But you can see it very clearly when you blow it up and you spend a couple of minutes looking at it.
Yep.
There are some real characters in there.
Yes.
This is not imagination. These images are very clear and very distinct in comparison to what a normal cloud looks like.
Yes.
We found something that looks like a moose, although the antlers resemble an FM antenna.
Right. I compared it to a blow-up photograph of insects that have antenna somewhat like that, and they have like these filial type of threads coming off them in a sort of a spiral fashion like that. That
mm-hmm.
reminded me most of photomicrographs that I have. I had this wonderful researcher in Florida, I'm trying to remember his name, but he did terrific work on recognizing that many insects have protrusions on their body, antennas, but also barbs that act as microwave antennas and transmitters.
Mm-hmm.
His name will come to me in a minute. He's a well-known author in the alternative science world. But he had some terrific photos there of enlarged photos of certain insects, and their antennas look very similar to the ones that we spotted from my video. So
mm-hmm.
the reason we're having, we want people to know, hear this conversation, is that in order to do something about chemtrails, the first thing you should look into is making orgone generators, obtaining them, and distributing them in your area. Now, Don Croft is the one who found out that if you put an orgone generator, it doesn't have to be a big one. It can be as small as a 4-ounce orgone generator. And I have a number of them on my website that I make available. But there's plenty of other people who also do this besides me. But we have a small one. We call it a muffin because it's cast in a muffin tin. And it has, it's about a little over 4 ounces of a fiberglass resin, some metal chips, and there's a fairly substantial quartz crystal in the middle of it, a double terminated quartz crystal. And I put two or three different types of metals in mine just to get a little bit of a different energy signature. I also, for those who are interested and want to make their own, I add carbon granules to my resin because, you know, the earth is carbon-based, we're carbon-based, I wanted to bring in that resonance. That was an idea I got 5 or 6 years ago from one of the gals on the Orgone chat forums. Her name was Gail Stark. Anyway, if you can get within 1,300 feet of the cell phone tower that's closest to your house, you should take care of your own area first. You need to find out where are the cell phone towers in a 2-mile radius of your house. You can sometimes find that information on the internet, but you can also just drive around, get a map, and mark it on a map so you know where they are. And if you can get one of these generators ideally buried under the ground within 1,300 feet, or sometimes we can put them down a fence pipe post, sometimes we could bury him under a tree, because trees act as an antenna. Sometimes we bury him under bushes. Sometimes the only thing we can do is toss him into bushes that are adjacent to a tower. If that's what you have to do, then that's what you ought to do. But we call this gifting, the planting of an orgone generator within a maximum radius of 1,300 feet. Generally, I try to get within 100 to 200 feet of a tower. It's usually quite easy. Sometimes it's not. So people don't have to climb over fences. You don't have to get into trespassing. No, no. 1,300 feet is a big radius. It's 3.5 football fields long. So it gives you a lot of latitude. So even if you're a third of a block away from that orgone generator, it's still going to have the effect we're describing. The more orgone generators that are gifted at cell phone towers, we convert the cell phone tower from a negative door radiator into a positive OR radiator. Because if you remember what I said in the beginning, what does an orgone generator do? It changes the polarity of orgone energy from the negative form into the positive form. That's what it does. Now, they meaning the government who's involved in this whole genocide agenda of chemtrails, this whole mind control agenda of using microwaves with cell phone towers, and their negative alien pals. All of their systems depend on a door energy polarity. The alien spaceships that are associated with the Illuminati, their ships function on door energy. So these people, if you want to call them people, are comfortable in a door environment because it's the nature of their vibes. On the other hand, when they're exposed to an OR environment, it's uncomfortable for them. It's too, shall we say, goody-two-shoes for them. They don't like that vibration because it's too much like affirmation of life. It's too much like it's on the creative side of the pendulum rather than the destructive side. And, of course, they want to stay on the destructive side of the bar. So there's a lot of beneficial things that happen when you disperse orgone generators. Now, if you really want to draw sylphs into your area, well, you got to set up a sylph beacon, as it were. You know, like a lighthouse with a rotating light on it on a dark coast. Well, when you put a chembuster in your backyard or on your back patio or out in the field, you've just set up a rotating lighthouse that's like a ship to shore beacon for sylphs, because they will instantly focus on that, because to them they are drawn to that energy. And now the nice thing is if you bring a lot of these guys into your neighborhood, they do you the favor of munching up the chemtrails that are being sprayed on it. And that's why we want to try to get up or install both chembusters and get the smaller orgone generators well gifted to the cell phone towers networks, because they all tend to act in concert, so that the more we change the door energy signature over to the OR, we bring in more friendly alien ships because they find the energy more to their liking. And at the same time, we tend to repel the negative alien forces, because this energy signature is not the one they want. It's not the one they feel comfortable in. They feel very unstable in that energy field. In fact, Wilhelm Reich used to destabilize and force negatively orientated aliens used to, this goes back to like 1953, in Rangeley, Maine. That's where he had his estate. Well, the estate is still there. And in 1952-53, the negative aliens, because of the brilliance of Wright's works, wanted to try to put him out of business, and they set up a series of saucers around his property. They were, you know, a few miles up, but they were steadily raining down door energy. Now, of course, Reich had to figure out what it was that was happening, but he noticed that all the vegetation was starting to die. He noticed this sort of black substance that was forming on the rocks. The trees were dying, the plants were dying, everything was dying, because they were steadily raining down this door energy. Door is destructive by nature. It's the decay cycle of the life cycle, okay? And Reich, you know, got very ill. Many of his workers got very ill. They could no longer continue to work inside the labs because this energy was becoming so intense. They were having incredible headaches, nauseous. They were getting sick. It was something. So what he did is that he invented the first cloud buster. And he noticed that he can direct orgone energy with a cloud buster. And he took the cloud buster, and he by this time he had realized that these spaceships were in parked in what we call picket position around his property. He could see them. Even though he was in his 50s at the time, he still had sharp eyes, very, very sharp eyes, and he could see them. He took the cloud buster, which had long pipes on it, maybe an array of perhaps 12 pipes that were 14 to 15 feet long. He aimed the whole array at the underside of the spacecraft, and the spacecraft began to wobble violently, and it had to take off because it couldn't stay in that position. It shot straight up and out of sight. So he learned that, hey, I can do something about these guys. So he started to do that with the other ones. Well, they no longer could keep their picket position, nor could they continue to rain this door energy down and poison his estate there, because he learned how to shoot back at them, not with bullets, but with orgone energy. Now, I'm not making this up. Reich himself wrote about this and published a book in 1953 about the whole episode of his attack, invasion by these unfriendly aliens, and how he got rid of them using the cloudbuster exactly the way I described to you. I'm trying to remember the name of it. It might have been they came from the sky or something close to that. But he published a book about it. About this event.
They okay. live. just well, joking.
Yeah. So.
You know, a thought entered my mind here. Give you a chance to catch your breath for a minute here.
Yeah, I've been, yeah.
No, it's all very, very interesting. You know, when you mentioned that the Sylphs sort of gather all of this DOR or the putrid components of chemtrails and then expel them.
Yes.
I wonder if we added to our intention that they deposit them near the entrances to underground bases, if they would help us out there.
Now, that's a winning idea. I hadn't even thought of that.
And maybe a little over Washington, just for the heck of it.
I like that. Yeah, maybe some of the, Wright Pat and some of those places. Could use a little bit. That is funny. I see your chemtrail page. I'm going to your page. I want to see. Oh, I see. Let's see now.
Classy, isn't it?
It's excellent. Boy, we've got to get people. All right, to get to your write-up about these shots we're talking about, people need to go to your website first, which is DirectLightProductions.com.
Yeah.
And once they get there, there's links at the top of the page, and one of the links on the top row says chemtrails. And they click that, and then the first article that's going to come up is the one we're talking about now, I haven't read your write-up yet. I can't read and talk to you at the same time, but it looks fascinating. But I see that you've posted some of the photos that I had sent to you, and then, more interestingly, some of the Photoshop filtering processes. I put some of the photos through to draw out the detail of exactly what's going on with these silt structures. And this is fascinating. Oh, my goodness, you put a bunch of them up here. Didn't
I put them all up there.
And we're going to, you know, this is fabulous. When they get, well, eventually what I'll do is I'll post the very video clip from which the more dramatic faces we've noticed came from, so everybody can get to view it. But from that video clip, as it was going around, we noticed that there were certain visages that popped right out, and the one that was just unbelievably clear was the man with the, well, the, we'll call him the Barnum and Bailey clown. He seems to have a perfectly round, bulbous nose and a hat that reminds me of a clown hat or a hat that a peasant would wear in the Middle Ages. And then I see that you put the blowing a kitten, if we're going to call it that, at the bottom. And, oh, this is great. Well, people are going to have fun with it. And there's substantially more from this same group. When the two of us have more to go through, because I've yet to send you the balance of the still photos I took that day. There's some very dramatic shots in the still photos to really emphasize the idea that these transmuted clouds are created by the sylphs, and now more important, they can coalesce or agglutinate into a ordinary, healthy, puffy cumulus cloud. It was a fantastic day yesterday to see that degree of cleaning of the skies. The lack of that chemtrail haze by time the sun was going down was just wonderful to see. And here's another point I might mention to you. If you recall, for years, when we took chemtrail pictures as the sun was going down, very often the chemtrails and any natural clouds that might be there all had a very distinct pink glow to them. You recall that?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Now, you'll see, well, you can see from one or two here, but what I've noticed now for quite some time now, because of the activity of the sylphs, is that they're able, it was my guess that the pink was due to the red desiccated blood cells.
Absolutely.
That they were spraying.
Absolutely, I agree with that.
Right. Now, it could possibly be they stopped spraying those, so I can't say that's not a possibility. It is. However, I have noticed in pictures of chemtrails from other locations, not the ones I've taken locally, I still see the pink. However, locally, particularly in this day, yesterday, I noticed that the sun is a very white yellow. It's not a hazy, a darker yellow. It's a white yellow, so the rays of the sun are much whiter. The sky in the background is much bluer, but the remaining clouds, there's a few little fragments of chemtrails, not much, but the remaining clouds, etc., all look whitish to yellow. There's no pink residue anymore. And to me, that's a very good sign that they're totally vacuuming even that out of the chemtrails. If people can put aside their, let's say, their knee-jerk skepticism about this and open their mind and realize that we can defeat chemtrails, and we can therefore save the health of future generations. We can truncate the genocide agenda which they have in mind for us by merely observing what's going on in the sky. First, look up. See chemtrails. Get to recognize chemtrails. Plenty of pictures on the internet to learn from. And then recognize that orgone generators, the big chem busters, the smaller tower busters as they're called, can definitely improve the air over, you know, where you're living, because we can disperse these chemtrails. And if you use the intention of your mind, you have a little dialogue, set up a couple chem busters, call in the sylphs to help you, they will come in. I have the pictures I took yesterday. It's just one group of many. I have thousands and thousands of pictures that I've taken and just stuck into folders, because it takes time to put them up on the website, and I've been too busy. But I have fabulous shots of sylphs, all kinds of sylphs. I've had a parade of sylphs come over the house. They're moving quick, one unbelievable form after another that I have both stills and videos of. The day is coming when I'm going to get these shots up there, and people will be thrilled to see what's possible. But all this came about because of the understanding that orgone generators bring in sylphs, and sylphs in turn will digest, transmute, and neutralize chemtrails. Anyone who's listening to this show needs to know this, and they can get the same sort of pictures that you've put up in this essay themselves. Because I just had a man from Italy who sent me a picture that he took out of his window of his home. He sent me an email, and he told me he was so upset because they're spraying his town in northern Italy so badly, and he's so depressed, chemtrails. He knows they're poison, and he was so angry about it, and he asked in his mind the sylphs to come and help. And he mentioned in his note, it's on my website. Go to the current news, go down to the latest articles. The third article from the top, it says, chemtrails over northern Italy. He says, I was so angry that the sylphs seemed to suddenly appear and to begin to digest and consume those chemtrails. And he took a picture out of his window, and we've reproduced it on that page here. It's a magnificent sylph, and there's many parts of the sylph. There's different sub-sylphs within that larger sylph, and you were able to spot more figures than I did from that show.
I had a lot of practice from looking at the World Trade Center military photos that I posted on my site, which are really the opposite of the sylphs. Those are demon manifestations or demonic manifestations.
Yes. Yeah, we should tell folks that the photos that are on your website and under your photo archives, there's a series of them devoted to the World Trade Center. These are not any photos that they've ever saw on CNN or mainstream news. You obtained them from a special source, from a military source, and you published them all. And what we did a few months ago, when you first obtained them, you sent me a copy of them, we were on the phone, we started to enlarge and examine the smoke that was billowing out of the World Trade Center 1 and 2. And when you enlarge it and start looking very carefully and tweak the contrast, you begin to see faces emerging, very distinct faces, and you and I were having a lot of fun giving names to these various faces. One face we called Adolf Hitler, I remember, and it was amazing. I think you haven't debuted yet those photos which isolated at the time, but
yeah, the crops we're talking about.
The crops, but anybody else can go and look at your pictures and try to do the very thing we did. Look deep and hard in the smoke, and naturally you have to enlarge the picture many times and see what you see.
Now, in addition to that, there was an anomaly, if you recall, on one of the towers. You know, there was a shot of the windows and the concrete work in between the windows, and it was sort of a vertical slat type effect.
Yes.
A very modern looking. And when you zoom in close to that, there was actually skull and bones image on the, I don't know if you recall that, but on the building itself. And above it were people standing at the windows. You know, trying to escape the flames.
I remember that. I do remember that. That was a fascinating day we spent. I know we spent many hours looking at those photos and on the phone at the same time, because it was so exciting to discover one after another.
It was a thrill by any means, but just
not in that sense, but the fact that we can see what others, I recall very well, Phil Schneider made a statement in his workshop in Colorado in 1995. He gave a two-hour workshop in which he said that when you have a nuclear explosion, that a devil face or will show up in the smoke of the explosion, particularly, you know, when like over Hiroshima and Nagasaki, where deaths of innocent people are involved, you will always get a manifestation of a demon form in the smoke. So we're seeing the same phenomena, the smoke of the World Trade Center. It was a set up ritual murder.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you know, satanically organized, planned, and executed. So all of the elements that go in with mass satanic murder, demons and other, all types of beings manifest. I do recall there are some what looked to me like even angel-like figures, winged-like figures in among the smoke. When you're ready, I guess you'll want to, that's going to be a blockbuster, expose of those shots when you're ready to do it.
Yes, it's quite compelling. And the reason I brought that up is, I see it as exactly the opposite of what we have been talking about primarily tonight, and that's 180 degrees in the other direction.
Right. What you're saying that with the sylph and cleaning up the chemtrails, we seem to be getting the efforts of positive beings, life-affirming beings, and the nature of their appearance that they're taking with these cloud shapes seems to reflect a more benign visage, although sometimes they can look fierce in terms of attacking the chemtrails. Sometimes we get what looks like a wolf or a dragon, which can look fierce, but fierce in a way of attacking the dragon of the chemtrail poison, I suppose you could say. But this video that I had taken last night with these delightful faces, it was just such a gas to run into this totally by accident. Didn't realize it till I just ran the tape. As I was shooting it, of course, I'm looking through the viewfinder. I noticed none of these details at all. So other people should do this. There's a fellow, a friend of mine, he's a truck driver. I'm going to be posting his pictures pretty soon. His name is Roland. He contacted me in the late fall of last year, probably around October 2007, and he told me that he's working with an Orgone device that he got from a man in Romania whose name is Cescu. And this device was able to kind of act like a beacon for Sils for his truck. So Sils started to follow him. He's a cross-country truck driver. He goes from one end of the North America to the other all the time. And he has this whole legion of Sils driving in parallel with him, behind him, and in front of him. It's kind of like a rolling armada of Sils. And they very often will clear the air in front of them. They'll get ahead of them a number of miles, and they'll create rain, and they'll cause the chemtrails to drop out of the atmosphere. And the guy just has wonderful pictures and stories of how these Sils seem to have bonded with them. And the funniest thing is that the shapes they take on are very, very distinct. And he's taking pictures with his cell phone. He's been sending them to me. I've got many hundreds of them, not a few hundred. I will be putting them up, and people will be very pleasantly surprised. And they're sort of crisscrossing the country, kicking ass in the chemtrail cleaning business, if you will. And when he stops at a diner to eat, or when he stops at a motel, the Sils wait for him. They simply park in the sky, and when he comes out, whether it's an hour later or 6 hours later, the same Sils is in the same location. He starts up the truck, they start rolling with him. It's the most amazing story that I've ever heard. It's, this guy is just remarkable.
Well, Ken, we're out of time. I know we were going to discuss some energy devices, some new devices. I guess we can hold that for tomorrow. You again are going to be our guest.
Yes, we'll go into it tomorrow. I know that an hour goes by fairly fast, and we want to try to ventilate these stories in with sufficient detail so that the listener will get the idea that he can participate in fighting chemtrails and fighting the New World Order the same way that we can, because there's nothing we're doing that the average Joe cannot do.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter
of
being...
I want to welcome the listening audience to visit your website, educate-yourself.org, and also visit my website, directlightproductions.com. Click on Ken Chemtrails at the top of the pages. Ken described to you so eloquently. You've been the host tonight, actually.
Well, thank you. I suppose I wanted to describe this, but I'm always interested in hearing what you have to say, Don. Many times you've done this show alone, and your monologues have simply been off the chart. I plan to capture many of your shows and make them available on my website so other people can hear what I've been hearing, because you say many things that resonate completely with my own analysis of what's taking place, as well as how to address it and how to reverse this takeover agenda.
Well, I appreciate your kind words. Of course, you know how much respect I have for your research and just the incredible numbers you do at your website speak volumes about the kind of person you are and how meticulous and detail-oriented you are in your work. And you were, as I said last night, you are very fair. Sometimes I think you're too kind.
Okay,
to me, but I'm saying in general to those that would even attack you. You know, you give them the benefit of the doubt. And if anyone wants to read an eloquent put down, I think Ken Adachi is a master at that.
Well, we always try to do something like that with a higher purpose in mind.
Yes, exactly. You know, this is about helping people. Unfortunately, there are some out there that haven't awakened sufficiently to get it. And you know, we can hope and pray that happens and that they'll join the party, because we're entering some very interesting times now, and of course, these are some of the darkest days, but before the darkness can consume everything, the light returns, and
yeah.
That's what's happening. So, Ken, I look forward to your appearance again tomorrow night on Evident Footprints, and I'm sure the listening audience does as well. And we also want to encourage you to subscribe to bbsradio.com archives. You can get all of the archives on the network for a very affordable nominal fee, and it helps cover the bandwidth costs, and you keep these shows alive and keep BBS in business. And I'm sure Don Newsom and Doug Newsom would appreciate that as well. The shows are archived. Usually they get there, if not the same day, by the next day. And you can enter it on the archive link. And there's also a subscription link for you to do that. It's very easy to do. It's very, very affordable and worthwhile because there are a lot of good shows. And I also want to extend a special thank you to Dr. Len Horowitz for keeping the listening audience here every Tuesday night after his Insight Hour. And I want to welcome Reverend Roxy Hampton back to the world. She was away for about 5 weeks, and hope she's feeling better. She was suffering from a back injury. So, with that, Ken, I'm going to say goodnight, wish our listening audience a good night along with me, and we'll see you tomorrow night. And you folks out there, thank you for listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com. I'm Don Nikoloff, your host. Tonight's guest, Ken Adachi, will be with us again tomorrow. Also, join me at 1 p.m. Pacific time for the TNT News Hour. That's Wednesday afternoon, 1 p.m. Pacific. In the meantime, have a peaceful, loving, and joy-filled night and a good night.